Famous Amos chocolate chip cookies are so iconic that I just say Famous Amos and it's like I can taste it. Each cookie is filled with semi-sweet chocolate chips and a satisfying crunch. And the word satisfying is very key there because some cookies are crunchy and brittle, and I don't like that. But Famous Amos has a deep, tooth-sinkable, satisfying crunch that I know and love. And Famous Amos classic bite-sized chocolate chip cookies are bringing back the original recipe that everyone knows and loves. One perfect bite, everything classic in a cookie. Find Famous Amos cookies anywhere you buy your favorite snacks. This episode contains explicit language. Anthony, so I feel like you strike me as a person who's very kind, thoughtful, sensitive, but I also have a theory about you. I think that maybe underlying that kind-hearted Canadian is also a person who has very strong opinions about food.
I do.
So let me hit you with a few quick Anthony hot takes here, okay?
Sure.
You grew up in Montreal, which is famous for its bagels. What is the best bagel place in Montreal?
Saint-Viateur bagels. After Polish school every Saturday, my dad would go and get a dozen sesame seed bagels, and I would get like the 13th, and it would always be warm and perfect, and I would dip it in this. It's like a smoked salmon spread that was just fantastic. Oh.
And you're not a poppy person.
I am in desserts, but for bagels, I love the, there's something about like the sweetness and the crunch of sesame seeds that I much prefer.
A poppy seed doesn't bring much to a bagel.
It doesn't.
I've heard you say that you never order chicken in a restaurant.
That's a lie. I did say that. I did say that.
Okay.
But that's a lie.
Okay.
As soon as you said that, I got the image of someone from the kitchen at Nomad here in New York, and they serve the greatest chicken I've ever had in my life. It's deconstructed chicken. So the chicken breast, in between the skin and the breast, it's like a truffle brioche spread.
Oh, my word.
And then the chicken thighs are removed from the bone and tossed in like a nice citrusy aioli with some like supremes of like grapefruits and stuff. But that one changes every time. And then the chicken wings, I don't know how the hell they do this, but they remove it fully from the bone. And it's kind of like a panko crust and they're just beautifully crispy. But 95% of the time, chicken's for home.
This is The Sporkful. It's not for foodies, it's for eaters. I'm Dan Pashman. Each week on our show, we obsess about food to learn more about people. Anthony Porovsky is one of the stars of Queer Eye, the Netflix reboot of the early 2000s show Queer Eye for the Straight Guy. The premise? A group of five queer experts does a full lifestyle makeover for someone who needs it. Each of the Fab Five focuses on one aspect of this hero's life. Clothing, grooming, interior design, culture, and of course, food. Which is where Anthony comes in. His job is to help the subject of each episode learn to cook something, and to help them use food as a way to connect. There's the episode with John, whose 10-year-old daughter sees him as a man-child. When Anthony finds out John's daughter often makes her own breakfast, he teaches John to make pancakes for her. Then there's an episode with Tyreek, a young man who'd been homeless and estranged from the woman who raised him. Anthony shows him how to make crab boil for her.
I want Tyreek to have a fun experience, something that gets him connected to food. Crab boil is something that's very emotional to him. It ties him to family. It's not the most technical recipe. It's actually really simple.
Before Queer Eye, Anthony was an actor, and he worked as a gallerist and personal assistant. In college, he studied psychology. But wherever he was, good food was always close by. Like when he worked in restaurants as a waiter and busser. One of those jobs was at an Italian spot in Montreal.
We had like Monday nights, almost nobody would work because that was like the least busy day. And so we would do like a potluck. And I became obsessed with risotto because I was broke and I wanted to make something nice. And people who work in restaurants like no good food. And so I would get like a bottle or two of Prosecco, some Arborio rice, a bunch of lemons, a big hunk of Parm, and some like really good chicken broth that either I made my own or I had some from like a market or whatever. And I would just make a perfect risotto and everyone would bring like a bottle of wine and then we would all go out afterwards. It was the first time that I had actually made food for other people. Like growing up, food was so incredibly important in my home. But my mother, who's a lot like me in many ways, like didn't want anyone in the kitchen helping her. So I sat on the other end of the kitchen table and I just like stared and watched. And I was just kind of like transfixed and like taking it all in and like learning. So when it came time when I had my own life and my own apartment and I was able to do that, I already kind of like had some of those tools. And then I understood, because I always judged her for it. I was always like, why won't you let me help you? Because I never cut the onions right. I never cut the carrots right. And I had like such a resentment. And then I understood and I was like, oh no, it feels really good to like be able to like do the whole thing yourself. It's hard for me to ask for help in the kitchen.
Yeah, I'm the same way. You know, I want to be the kind of person who's like, hey, you do this, you do that. Hey, everyone's going to help. I was at a friend's house last night and she was like, hey, can you help put these hors d'oeuvres together? You chop the dates, you do the spread. And I was like, it's so nice. And, you know, it gives everyone something to do. But I'm still like, but they might not chop it just right.
Right. But then if you watch like Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat and you see Samin, I forget what it was that she was doing, but she had a friend over and she had them partake in making this dish. And they were so excited to eat it afterwards because they felt empowered and she got to teach them something in the process. There's an element of like making it something that's inclusive there. I'm really trying to be that person. It's
right.
Very hard.
But yeah, like, yeah. And
I wish I could do more of that.
You and me both. Someday. That love of food, though, and how you felt it was so important, but was that something that your parents instilled in you?
Totally. I mean, growing up, like my most cherished memories as a kid were breakfast and dinner. Breakfast was always a massive spread with like a fresh cut open papaya with lime juice and a bit of salt, any type of like fresh berries. And because we're Polish, we just had a shit ton of charcuterie everywhere from the Polish deli and rye bread and like good cold butter and eggs. And like for dinner, it was always a production. My parents traveled a lot. And whenever we would travel with them, it was always about like, where are we going to eat? When we're having breakfast, we were thinking about like, where are we going for dinner? Which market are we going to?
But so I think kind of part of what I'm driving at here, Anthony, is that it seems like food really matters to you. Like in a way beyond just sort of like, look, we love to eat. It's delicious. Some people care more about every meal than others. You're someone who cares a lot about eating delicious food. But like, it seems like it matters to you beyond that.
It's incredibly important to me. I think it's, honestly, like even if I get ground turkey and some carrots and celery and I do a nice little mix for my dog, I know that she's like just a dog, but like it makes me feel so good knowing that like I made something for her. Or even like scrambled eggs on a Saturday morning with my boyfriend after like a workout and like watching the joy in their faces when you made something successfully, when it's like really good. Or when people try something for the first time and you got to be there for that. It's everything.
Anthony was not the obvious choice for Queer Eye's food expert. As much as he loves food, he's not a professional chef. He has no formal culinary training. And he was going up for the job against lots of people who were chefs. He says he struggled with imposter syndrome. But Queer Eye picked him anyway. The show was a big hit right off the bat when it debuted in 2018, and it made Anthony a food celebrity overnight. But food celebrity was not a title he ever expected to have.
Food for me has always been something that's been really intimate and kind of private. And I think until Queer Eye came out, I've always been a very compartmentalized person. When it comes to my sexuality and food in particular, and Queer Eye is something that just ripped those two like compartments and just shoved them in with everything else in the public space.
The reaction to the Queer Eye reboot was overwhelmingly positive. It's a feel-good reality show where the goal is to find people who've experienced hardship and help them improve their lives. But a lot of people found fault with Anthony and the way he cooked. His critics didn't like that he put Greek yogurt in guacamole. They said the dishes he made were too simple. A website called Junkie said maybe Anthony was, quote, an incredibly handsome person hired to act like a food expert. Eater suggested the main reason he got the gig was that he knew Chopped host Ted Allen, who was the food expert on the original Queer Eye. It was crazy to me, looking back, you know, when Queer Eye first came out, how many of the stories about you started with, like, but can this guy actually cook?
Right.
And, you know, I would imagine that was a tough thing to deal with if you're someone who's already kind of, like, tends towards imposter syndrome.
It's literally the worst thing you could possibly hear when you're already thinking that about yourself. And then you have people who are saying that. Right. And all you see, like all I saw was that. I took out all of the good and I just like focused in on all of the bad. And it made me miserable. You know, my therapist told me this when the show came out. She was saying, she's like, well, for someone like you who like so needs to be loved by everybody, she's like, That's impossible now. You're like a public person. The numbers game just like increased exponentially, and there are going to be a lot more people who like you, but there are also going to be a lot more people who like don't like you or don't like what you do or are critical for valid or invalid reasons, whatever the case may be.
Despite that advice, Anthony still felt compelled to win over as many people as he could.
It motivated me to write a first cookbook so that I can, you know, prove to people that I could actually cook. Because people, I think a lot of people thought that, you know, the dishes that I was preparing on Queer Eye for the Heroes were a reflection of my own knowledge, which they are. But there are a lot of plenty other things that I know how to do.
You said that sort of you feel like part of why you got the job was that you're accessible, that you're a great communicator. It was more about that than it was about culinary expertise. And I wonder, like, do you think that being very good looking ever sometimes works against you? Like, people think that if you're good looking, that's why you got a certain opportunity?
Totally. Absolutely. And I've spoken to people who have kind of like had to kind of like fight against that. I think I'm not going to say everybody, but I think that for certain people, it's hard to imagine that somebody can be more than one thing. They struggled with me during the casting process of Queer Eye because I think there was this assumption that it was like, oh no, he's like a struggling actor who's coming in and like wants to be on a show. So this is going to be his thing. And near the end of casting, I made a comment. We were in one of the show creators' homes, and I was like, oh, you have a really cool Roger Sprunger table in your living room. And Roger Sprunger was this like designer in the 60s or 70s, and I'm like obsessed with vintage furniture and like post-war art. And they all kind of looked at me like, how the fuck, like what? How did you know that? And I was like, oh, well, that's like another one of my passions, and like they get me really excited. And they were like, oh, so you like that kind of stuff too? And I feel like then they started to realize, oh no, like he's more than just like this one thing. But I see that as like, it's like a fun challenge because you get to kind of like prove people wrong.
Do you feel pressure to maintain a certain body image?
Yes.
Especially since you're more in the public eye?
100%. I think in particular with, you know, the first time that I saw my scenes in Queer Eye, I would notice like certain mannerisms that I have. And the same went for kind of like what my appearance was. I think that has more to do with self-imposed comparison, namely Instagram, which is like, get me on the, you know, the wrong day. And if I open up Instagram and I see my explore page and then suddenly it's like, I'm going to have juices and salad today. And for the next 3 days, I'm not going to have like any carbs. And I know that a lot of that is self-imposed. And that happens on days usually when like I wake up and I'm not feeling super confident, when I'm like, there's a relationship with that and the imposter syndrome and all of that, because then I fall into compare and despair. Where I don't criticize other people, I really make up for it with myself. Like I can be my own worst critic. And that's a tricky balance as well, because I do love to eat healthy. I do love to work out and to be very active and go on hikes and do all kinds of activities and box and do all that kind of stuff. But at one point it's kind of like, okay, am I doing this to like feel better? Am I doing this because I'm trying to attain some kind of like an unrealistic ideal?
Right. Or are you doing it to sort of like punish yourself for something you shouldn't be punishing yourself for?
Totally.
You've described yourself as an emotional eater. That seems to be like it must be a difficult thing to navigate, which is like a lot of pressure to maintain a certain body image, but also food as a way to deal with certain feelings. And I personally think that like emotional eating in moderation is fine. Like once in a while you treat yourself, have a giant ice cream sundae, have a pizza.
Absolutely.
But I wonder like how you navigate those two seem like possible contrasting extremes.
Yeah, and I am definitely a person of extremes. If I like take something on, I do it 1,000,000%. With the emotional eating part, it's like I try to just check in, and this is like a daily thing for me that I kind of like check in on. The ice cream sundae, if it starts to happen where it's only happening on really shitty days, that's a sign. If it's only happening on really good days, that's a sign as well.
It's like a sign of what?
A sign that I'm kind of like, am I trying to get out of my feelings? If I reward myself for something, that's one thing. And sometimes you're just having a really bad day and all I want is like a vat of mac and cheese or like a whole entire pizza to myself. And that's fine. But I just try to make sure that I don't do that consistently and try to and develop like habits or patterns with that. Same goes with punishing myself. Punishing is a strong word, but kind of like being very careful about what I eat and only eating like really healthy food. It's like everything in moderation, even moderation.
Coming up, Anthony and I talk about the principles of great salads, and he nearly collapses at the mere mention of one of his favorite dishes. Plus, we find out if writing a cookbook as a way of proving yourself actually works. Stick around.
And now, a delicious word from our sponsors.
Norwegian Cruise Line breaks the boundaries of global cruise travel. When you cruise with NCL, you're going to get award-winning specialty restaurants, a variety of food and beverage offerings, immersive entertainment, and the most thrilling experiences at sea. It is first class. These ships have all kinds of specialty restaurants: Brazilian steakhouse, French, Spanish, Italian, Japanese, Mexican. Select ships also feature al fresco dining on the waterfront and Ocean Boulevard, an oceanside promenade lined with bars and restaurants. Norwegian provides guests with truly authentic and fresh dining and bar experiences complemented by exceptional service. Almost everything you'll eat is prepared from scratch by highly experienced chefs. And they got whatever you're going to be in the mood for. You want a quick casual family meal? They've got that. You want a beautiful four-course feast? They've got that too. And you can sip something delicious at one of up to 23 unique bar and lounge options per ship. Visit and explore exciting destinations around the world and enjoy unique experiences on board. With no set dining and entertainment times and no formal dress codes, you have the flexibility to design your ideal vacation. Book your next adventure at ncl.com. Recently, I went into my closet to try to get a collared shirt out, and it occurred to me that I don't think I have bought a new collared shirt in 5 years. I mean, every shirt in there was either really old, or it had some kind of perma-stain situation, or it probably never fit right in the first place. I gotta freshen up a little bit here. It's time for something new, right? And spring is coming. Now is the time if you've been looking to refresh your wardrobe, home, or skincare and beauty routines this season. Because, you know, Walmart has genuinely surprising style finds that don't break the bank. This spring, there's only one destination for the latest fashion, home, and beauty inspired by real life. Walmart. I freshened up my wardrobe. I got some nice dress shirts, a couple light hoodies. You know, you need light hoodies for the springtime. Very useful, very comfortable. Discover surprisingly stylish new season favorites at Walmart now, or shop it all on the Walmart app. Go to walmart.com/nowtrending. That's walmart.com/nowtrending. Now trending, your style at Walmart. This episode is brought to you by Merrick Pet Care. We have a dog. Her name is Sasha. She's almost four. She's a standard poodle. She's black and fluffy and soft and very adorable. And when we first got her, we took her to like this puppy kindergarten training class. The whole family went, and you know, they're teaching how to use the treats and all this. The trainer watched Sasha for a bit and said, she's very food motivated. And my daughter Emily turned to me and said, she's a Pashman. And so she is food motivated. And that's why we make a point of feeding Sasha high quality pet food. Founded in Hereford, Texas, Merrick has been crafting high-quality dog food for over 30 years. Real is Merrick's recipe, so they always use deboned meat, fish, or poultry as the number one ingredient. And let me tell you something. When it's dinner time, Sasha is motivated, okay? She is highly motivated to come in from patrolling the backyard at dinner, to get up off the couch. Whatever she's doing, she will drop it and come running. Check out Merrick online or in your local pet store and look for their new packaging with real ingredients shown on the bag and inside it. I enjoy a nice glass of wine, but I don't pretend to be an expert in wine. I usually just want a wine that's high quality, delicious, and not too expensive. And to me, that's Bogle Family Vineyards. And here's the thing about Bogle. This is a third-generation family-owned winery from California that makes exceptional wines for about $10 a bottle. Bogle wines consistently earn Best Buy designations and high ratings from Wine Enthusiast. And let me tell you something. The folks at Wine Enthusiast, they drink a lot of wine. They drink a lot of fancy, expensive wine. And yet they still keep giving great ratings to Bogle. And Bogle Vineyards has so many different kinds of wine. Whatever your mood, whatever you're eating, there's a wine for you. They got this great Pinot Grigio that's crisp and fruity, goes well with spicy foods, with fish. They have a classic Chardonnay that's balanced, amazing with a pork tenderloin or butter chicken. I like to take that Chardonnay and do what Jacques Pepin taught me, a couple of ice cubes in your glass of Bogle. If Jacques Pepin says it's okay, then it's okay. And there's the Bogle Pinot Noir, refined and elegant with bright fruit and about as food-friendly as a red wine can be. You're not going to believe it's only $10. Neither will your friends. if you tell them. So pick up a few bottles of Bogle wherever you buy your favorite wines. Please drink responsibly. Welcome back to The Sporkful. I'm Dan Pashman. On last week's show, I sit down for a meal with Lindy West, cultural commentator and author of Shrill. Lindy describes herself as fat and explains to me why that's her preferred word.
I mean, I just think it's more honest. I personally don't like being referred to with euphemisms. They're still calling me fat, but they're also drawing attention to the fact that they're uncomfortable with my body. My end goal would be to make it okay to be fat and to let people live their lives without having to carry around this stigma.
Lindy also talks about the challenges of having a skinny husband. That one's up now. Check it out. Okay, back to my conversation with Anthony Porofsky. After that first season of Queer Eye, Anthony continued to work through his imposter syndrome with the help of a therapist. The second season of the show aired the same year, and there were two more in 2019. Then Anthony published his first cookbook, Anthony in the Kitchen. You know, the one he said he wrote in response to people saying he didn't know how to cook. So I wondered, did writing a cookbook to prove his haters wrong actually work?
Yes and no. I don't know. Actually, I don't know if it worked. But I think once it started, I definitely, if I'm like being 100% honest, I went in wanting to prove myself. And I did have ideas that were like a lot more ambitious and things that I wanted to make. But I remember when I had my first meeting with Rux Martin, my editor at Houghton, we were talking about the perfect bite. And the perfect bite for me is a medjool date or a Rutab date, but they're a lot harder to find, with a Marcona almond, a little bit of blue cheese wrapped in like prosciutto or bacon. And it's salty, sweet, sticky, crunchy. It just like checks all the boxes for me. And she was like, stop, like, just keep it simple. I want that to be, that's going to be a recipe in your book, by the way. And just kind of like take it from there. And I kind of like lost myself in it. And then I kind of forgot that my intention was trying to prove myself to people. And I just kind of got really excited by being like, oh my gosh, like, there was a raspberry mousse dome that my mother used to make for like literally every single special occasion and every Christmas, to bigos, which is like this hunter's stew, and like stuff that I ate when I was a student, when I was like really broke, and like cannellini beans with tomato paste and a bit of like fresh oregano and lemon juice, and put a can of olive oil soaked tuna in there. And it was like, wow, like I remember eating that all the time when I was broken in school. And then I just kind of like forgot about my original intention. Thank goodness, because I was able to just get the hell out of my own head and trying to prove myself, and just fell in love with the process of recipe developing and remembering all of these food memories.
So you ended up with something that was true to you and something you were proud of.
Yes.
And so in that sense, it did solve the problem, just in a different way than what you anticipated.
Not at all the way that I thought it would, which is usually how life turns out.
Right. Like instead of proving something to other people, you convinced yourself.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. I never actually thought of that, but yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. I think you should feel good about that.
Huh? Yeah.
Well, this has been a big breakthrough, Anthony.
I've had a few breakthroughs with you today, actually.
Now, 2 years after his first cookbook, and with nearly 50 episodes of Queer Eye under his belt, Anthony has a second cookbook out called Let's Do Dinner. He wrote it with his co-author, Mindy Fox. In the intro, he outlines his approach to dinner. Eat plant-based early in the week, then progress to some heartier dishes, then when the weekend hits, cross over into comfort food. I want to highlight a couple of the recipes in the new cookbook in particular. Mm-hmm. Roasted cabbage steaks. I love cabbage. I love that you write, cabbage is having a moment, which means that by default, Poland is too.
So I hated cabbage as a kid. There was something about the smell and the preparation. Look, my mother is an excellent home cook. But there are certain things that she was taught, probably by her mother, that Polish mothers have been making all the time. And they would just boil the shit out of cabbage, just like they would Brussels sprouts. And they would be mushy and brown. And they would add a little bit of cumin. And that was it. The cabbage steak is like, it's such a symbol for, I felt okay being Polish when I was growing up. And then I moved to a rural community in West Virginia where there wasn't that much diversity. And suddenly my name was weird. The fact that I spoke different languages was weird. I had a weird accent. My lunches were even weirder. And I suddenly had this like shame for who I was. And I wanted nothing to do with being Polish. I actually forgot Polish in a matter of 2 years. My parents were pissed, sent me back to Montreal. I had a Polish French tutor because I forgot French as well. I started working in a Polish restaurant. They used to be owned by my auntie, where my dad was a waiter, where my sisters both worked. It's like the rite of passage in Montreal to work at Stash Cafe. It still exists. It's awesome. They make the best pierogies of grandma's, make them in the basement. I reference it in the first book, and it's just so awesome. And the best cabbage rolls ever.
Okay.
With a nice little paprika-y tomato sauce, not with the creamy mushroom sauce like they do at Veselka. Veselka's great in New York, but I'm not crazy about that one.
I knew you had strong opinions about food.
I do. You got it out of me. But... I started working at this restaurant. Suddenly I was like, oh, cool. Like young Polish people who are actually proud to be Polish. And like, that's actually okay. And so here's this like cabbage steak thing that for me was inspired by like, I tried to think like, what would ABCV come up with? One of my favorite restaurants in New York. And it's just like giving like life and like really highlighting beautiful vegetables that are just like bright and colorful, and coming up with like a really nice applesauce that's just like really creamy, and some like raisins for like a nice little tart bite to it, and getting like that char on the cabbage. And it's like now I freaking love cabbage.
Yeah, I'm excited to cook that one because I love cabbage too. You have an array of salads in the book. Is there like a blueprint for a good salad? Like, what are the basic elements that any good salad has to have?
One of the most important things is definitely which greens you're going to use. If you have baby arugula or spinach, you have to kind of eat them the day of. Kale will actually, like a mature kale, will still be pretty good the next day. It just softens up really nicely. But it's also knowing how to treat the greens as well and knowing what kind of a vinaigrette to put. The only thing worse than an underdressed salad is like an overdressed salad, where it's just like swimming in dressing or vinaigrette or whatever it is that you're putting on it. Having a crunch element.
Yes.
If it's not going to be a crouton that's soaked in like a really nice vinaigrette just to soften it up a little bit, I love using nuts.
I feel like for salads, texture, a variety of textures is
yes.
key. You need
totally.
Something acidic and something fatty together, and that needs to be in the right balance.
Totally.
But
with
I
the
think
vinaigrette, yeah.
Yes. To me, one of the most under-considered part of salad composition is that it needs to be forkable. The different pieces, you need to be able to get them together into a bite. I love nuts in a salad, but like I feel like you need something for the nuts to stick to.
They gotta cling.
I also like the Caesar salad, where it's like a gigantic half loaf of romaine lettuce that they serve with a steak knife in a restaurant. Like, what the fuck am
yeah,
I supposed to do with that?
I know.
You know, like it just so irritating. It looks great, but it's form
right.
over function.
One thing I will say, and this was something I learned from the great Alice Waters. I was having a meal with her once at Via Carota, and we were having their famous insalata verde with that awesome vinaigrette. She was eating the salad, and she just started picking it up with her fingers.
Yes,
and she was salad tastes really good when you eat it with your hands. And I was
100%.
Like, that's crazy. And then I did it, and I was like, you are absolutely right.
Yes. Part of the reason why eating a salad with your hands it works is like it is just kind of fun. But also,
yeah.
again, bite composition. You have better control over bite composition when you can like fold a leaf over with your fingertips and get it all in your mouth. If it was long leaves of romaine and if I can pick them up with my hands and just hold the heart, the stem end,
totally.
That I can get behind.
So then you'll really enjoy, we have little romaine rafts with Turkish meatballs and grilled eggplant in the book as well. That's like really nice, which
yes.
is like, That's how I like to eat during the week because it's like so textural. It's crunchy. You have like a nice perfect meatball and then the chewiness of your eggplant that's seasoned just right.
I mean, that sounds fantastic. You remind me, I've been on a big larb kick, the Thai dish. Anthony just collapsed on his couch.
I fucking love larb so much.
It's so good. The ground meat and just you get all those different flavors together and the fish sauce and the lime and the crunch and the greens.
Tons of lemongrass in there. I put in the cilantro stems, all of it. It's so good. It's healthy.
So good.
It's packed with so much flavor. You need a nice aggressive hit of lime at the end. You get some beautiful Fresno chilies in there, mm-hmm. or some nice little like Thai birds, like really thinly sliced that just kind of like hit you. And then that fish sauce. It's one of my favorite things. My boyfriend loves it when I make that as well.
Would you describe yourself as a perfectionist in the kitchen?
If I make a mistake, like I used to really beat myself up for it, especially, I mean, I haven't hosted a dinner party in a really long time, but I was very good at like sitting down and being like, okay, so this like pasta that I made, like it's just slightly overcooked because I took it out when it was al dente, but it sat in the sauce too long. And then I would kind of like beat myself up over it before people had even the opportunity to enjoy a dish. Now I'm just kind of like, I just don't take it as seriously anymore, where it's sort of like, oh, well, if I made a mistake now, like I won't make it next time, hopefully, and I'll learn from it.
What changed?
Wow. These are really good questions, by the way.
Oh, thanks.
I'm really glad I'm very caffeinated. Yeah. what's changed? I think the more that I, you know what it is? Like, I just stopped caring about trying to be perfect because it's actually impossible. And it kind of makes me think a little bit about Queer Eye as being in like living in the public space now. And imposter syndrome certainly makes its way. Like I just have some days where I wake up and I'm just like, I'm a fraud. And then I have other days where it's just not really there. And now I'm at a stage, I think, in my life where I've kind of accepted the fact that it's there and I don't try to like push it away or fight against it. And I just accept it as a thing. And if I wake up and I'm feeling 60%, I'm just going to do like 100% of that 60%. And there's a freedom that came with that where my shoulders just kind of dropped. And I was like, I'm just going to be me. And I'm going to continue to be inherently curious and obsessive over food and try to be better for myself and for whoever has to put my food in their mouth.
That's Anthony Porofsky, food and wine expert on Queer Eye. His new cookbook, Let's Do Dinner, is out tomorrow, September 14th, or depending on when you listen to this, maybe today. So you can pre-order it or buy it wherever books are sold. Next week on the show, who really invented Flamin' Hot Cheetos? For years, the story went that a former janitor invented the snack, then worked his way up to being an executive at Frito-Lay. But when an LA Times investigation called that story into question, the paper became the target of a backlash. That's next week. While you're waiting for that one, check out my conversation with Lindy West, author of Shrill. It's available now in your feeds. And while you're doing that, please subscribe, favorite, like, you know, do all the things in the app so you get more episodes. Thanks. This show is produced by me, along with senior producer
Emma Morgenstern
and producer
Andres O'Hara.
Our editor is
Tracy Samuelson.
The show is mixed by
Jared O'Connell.
Music help from Black Label Music. The Sporkful is a production of Stitcher. Our executive producers are Peter Clowney and Daisy Rosario. Until next time, I'm Dan Pashman.
And I'm Laura Lynn Hildebrand from Winnipeg, Canada, reminding you to eat more, eat better, and eat more better.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.